Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 22nd day of December, Anno Domini 2018, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes
the
pre-Christmas news. Yes, exactly, the news.
The news.
There was a lot in the news this week, but I chose this as our main story because it amuses me again. Microsoft,
you're becoming easily amused in your old age.
I am. I'm retired now. And,
and the topic,
I have more time
How
not to. Microsoft has found itself fixing a lot of zero-day flaws recently, including CVE 2018-8611, patched this month, November's CVE 2018-8453, and CVE 2018-8589. Hike. And now it has released an emergency patch for remote code execution, zero-day vulnerability, and Internet Explorer's JScript scripting engine, affecting all versions of Windows, including Windows 10. Identified as CVE 2018-8653, the flaw was reported by Google's Threat Analysis Group, and according to Microsoft, is being exploited in targeted attacks even as we speak. The company hasn't elaborated on which attacks, but the fact is that it's being exploited at all explains why applying Microsoft patch should be a high priority. According to Microsoft, in a web-based attack scenario, an attacker could host a specially crafted website that is designed to exploit the vulnerability through Internet Explorer and then convince a user to view the website, for example, by sending an email. And Lord knows, too many of us just click on whatever we get in email. Exploitation depends on the privilege level of the targeted user, and Microsoft's latest advice says admins might consider limiting access to jscript.dll if they don't plan to implement the patch soon. Scroll down on Microsoft's advisory and notice the patch is also being offered as an update to IE11 for Windows 10. But hold on. Didn't Windows 10 replace IE with the Edge browser, which uses a different scripting engine, Chakra? Indeed it did. But for backwards compatibility reasons, IE components remain a default part of all Windows versions. So even if you don't use IE11 or any Microsoft browser at all, bits of it are lurking on every Windows system, presumably in case any older Microsoft applications or websites need to use them. This has always been Microsoft's OS philosophy. Steer clear of hard forks and make backwards compatibility a high priority. Apply the patch. Make sure you do that. It's Windows 10 64-bit users, whether they're running 1803, 1809, 1709. There's a Windows 8.1 version, a Windows 7 version for Service Pack 1. Update now. And that's our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Update now. Microsoft patches another zero-day flaw, and your choices are, I already did, I will now, I'm going commando, baby, and this is why I don't use Windows. So far, with 27 votes in, this is why I don't use Windows is in the lead with 44% of the votes. So all the Mac people woke up and are voting.
We get a lot of Linux people listening to the show.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Followed by I already did, I will now, and I'm going commando, baby. That's four of you. Now, I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right, under fascinating stuff, you will see the forums. In the forums, the second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 22 December 18, Microsoft patches another zero-day flaw. So far, there are two of us who have posted in that forum. And so you can join us by posting something there. And, of course, you can always give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Microsoft keeps coming up with these zero-day patches, and it just, you'd think with a company with that much money and that much experience in building operating systems would have a slightly better handle on what they're doing. You'd also think that at some point they got rid of IE 11 in everything they do, but apparently not. It is their philosophy to keep stuff around as long as possible. That's why some parts of Windows, even if you're running 64-bit version, are 32-bit. And that's one of the things that slows Windows down is that state change that has to happen every time you go to run a 32-bit thing on a 64-bit system.
And it's, well, see, Microsoft has always been really big on backward compatibility. Where Apple hasn't been afraid to cut, well, your computer's too old, you can't run the new OS. Apple's getting better at that. You can go back 5 or 6 years on Apple's, but and, you know, I could probably take a 20-year-old PC out of the closet and run Windows 10 on it. It would be dog slow, but it would probably run.
Yeah, it'd take probably about a half hour for just to load to get to the main screen.
Yep. However, let's not forget you could put Linux on it, and it would probably run perfectly well. Particularly, even with older machines, you can run Puppy Linux or Damn Small Linux, and even with very small amounts of RAM.
Sure, or Neverware.
Or Neverware.
Yeah, just put Chrome on it.
Well, Neverware still takes 2 gigs of RAM. So if you've got a machine with 1 gig or half a gig, then Puppy Linux or Damn Small Linux is probably your deal right there. We have Dennis Worcester.
Hello.
Has joined us in the studio. It's a Christmas treat for us.
Thank you. Thank you. It's mm-hmm. a treat especial for me as well.
Well, that's, you have to say that. You're in the yeah. studio now. You're surrounded by the three of us.
That's right. You're between me and the door, so.
So we're always delighted to have Dennis with us. It's a pleasure. Steve was not entirely sure he would be here.
That's okay. We had it covered one way or the other, and you know, a double dose of Mac.
Double dose of Mac. We're dang near outnumbered, Dave. It's a problem.
We've been replacing so many iPhone batteries that we've been swamped. In fact, we've run out of 7 batteries. We have orders coming in, but they haven't made it in yet. A lot of people need to know. So Apple lowered the price of iPhone battery replacements for the SE and on. So the SE, the 6, 6S, 7. 6 plus, 7 plus, I'll show. SE on. lowered the battery price to $29.
Wow.
From $79. So that's
Wow, major drop.
Because most of those phones are already in the 3, 4, 5 year old, which is about the limit length of a battery.
Right.
And so there was a lot of, what's the word I want? Conspiracy theory that Apple's new OS makes your phones slower, so you go buy a new phone. Not necessarily. It's your battery's getting old, so it lowers the clock speed down. So that there was a choice they made. They can lower the clock speed, or your phone can crash when it draws too much power. And in OS X, Apple decided, well, we'll lower the clock speed. And everyone was happy that their phone started crashing. Until somebody figured out that's how they made it stop crashing.
Right.
So in OS 11, there's now a switch. It's called peak performance. Yep. So you can choose whether you want your phone to slow down or crash when the battery gets old.
Excellent. Good choice. But at least you get to make the choice, and yep. that actually is a good thing.
Yeah. So now $29 gets you a new battery. Unfortunately, the price is going up first of the year. So, a week and a half now?
Yeah.
So in January 1st, the price is going up to $49 on the 6 and 7s, and I think it's $69 on the 10s. Which is still better than the 79 it used to be, but the price is going up.
Right.
Well, that's one thing people have to realize. Matter of fact, where I work, I'm just right now in the midst of switching out the tablets. And the folks are sitting there saying, well, they're working fine. Yeah, but you know what? They're coming to the end of their life. And they go, what do you mean? I go, like any other electronic device, it can only hold a charge so many times. You use that thing for 5 days a week for, say, 8 hours, and then you take it home and you charge it up to do it the next day. It's only going to last so long. They go, well, it's only like 3 years old. Yeah, they're coming to the end of the life. They aren't meant to last that long, and they're going to start failing.
Right.
And they have a hard time. Well, it's working now. Yeah.
So when it's new, your battery will last, say, 10 hours, and that's 100%. And that gets a little confusing because you charge the battery up and the icon says 100%. You know, 5 years later, you charge the battery up and 100% is 5 minutes.
Right.
The battery is still 100% charged, but its full charge capacity is now only 5 minutes.
Well, that's why we were trying to be proactive, because we were starting to see it, that the folks would charge their tablets up, full charge, and an hour or two into work, all of a sudden, the tablets are dying, and they're trying to hook them up to the chargers. Of course, the chargers and the vehicles aren't charging to the capacity that they do if you have it in an outlet, and they go totally dead. Then you're dead in the water, you know. It's like,
no, I
told you.
That's why I've always been unhappy that batteries are not replaceable anymore by the user. My old Galaxy S5, I pop off the back, put in a new battery, it was great. Now I have a Pixel XL, and it's still great. I mean, I get way more than 24 hours out of the battery, but I can't change it when it gets to the point.
But you don't need to. That's one other nice thing that they should change in a lot of the technology is, you know, granted, you know, they're going to drain. But in the Pixel, you'll notice if you have to charge it, it's got a better charging system in it. When your battery gets down to like 3-10%, I can plug it into my charger and it'll tell you within an hour it'll be up to full charge.
Yes. Right. Yes, because again, as Steve said, as the battery gets older, full charge is no longer 10 hours. Right.
But your point is well taken, that the capability to accept the charge is easier, and they're able to charge at a faster rate. When they're
that technology
less.
Should be they're, explored the f- more.
The fast charging capability, yeah.
Because we want, you know, everybody is guilty of this. They're relying on these devices more. So they're demanding more out of it. Watching TVs, watching movies, and everything else. You know, those batteries have to be able to be charged faster. Yeah. If it means going maybe a millimeter or two larger. Oh, well.
That's the issue. With the push toward being thin, the battery is now glued in place and becomes part of the structural integrity. So we need a structural integrity field.
And how many folks could honestly, you know, I mean, seriously, tell the difference between maybe a couple millimeters, I'm talking millimeters thicker than your current phone.
And a lot of times you put a case on it anyway.
Yeah.
So now I have a case for my case, so it's really big. So my phone is in a folio case, but then I put it in a wallet, a belt case, so I can have it on my belt too. Right. So my phone, it's a really thin phone in a giant case.
Right.
But the other thing that's interesting is that most phones typically come with a 5-watt charger. But many phones, and check with your manufacturer, many phones will take a 10 or 12 watt charger. Right. And then we'll, in essence, charge twice as fast. In the Apple world, the iPhone used a 5-watt. The iPad used a 12-watt. And so if you end up having both and you mix them up, your iPhone will charge really fast and your iPad will charge really slow.
Yeah, I bet.
But now the newer iPads can do an even faster charger, and so you can put a 29-watt charger on it. And charge it even faster. We had some interesting issues on our floor models at the office. On the 12.9-inch iPad with the 12-watt charger, it wouldn't run and charge at the same time.
Interesting.
So we leave it running its demos all day long.
Sure.
And the charge would drop because 12-watt coming in wasn't enough to keep up with the demo going. So now we've got a 29-watt charger on them, and they're okay.
It's always full now. Yeah. Yeah. All right. I think we've done enough.
The boss says Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Boss?
As in Rob Litton?
No, I don't recognize the description.
Okay.
Station manager.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, I remember him. Merry Christmas, Rob. Does that mean he's actually listening?
Apparently.
Wow.
For a change.
He's just sending the...
Well, then don't
that
tell
could be,
him.
Yeah, he could not be listening. He just sent the message because the true. Schedule says we're on. He didn't exit check.
He's on vacation.
Those who are watching on the YouTube channel, I'm inaugurating.
You can be first.
I'm opening the rumbles.
Drum roll.
The Dave Enright rumbles. Help yourself.
World famous.
Marinating for a week, 2 weeks, did you say, Dave? 2 weeks.
All I'm saying is they're dripping. That's all I'm saying.
Oh!
Sound like peaceful.
Good Caribbean rum.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry for the dead air, but I was chewing. Wow, that's good. Well done, Mr. Enright, sir.
Thank you.
I need that recipe.
No, thank you. Holy moly, that's good. I think it's enough of these for 1 week.
Everyone has their specialty. My dad always made fudge at Christmas, and that's over this time of year, you know, we really miss it now that he's gone. And I've tried using his recipe, but it's not the same.
I've got a place for it.
Yeah,
I know a place.
Yeah. There's some nice chocolatiers in town, but you know your dad's fudge.
Believe it or not, there's no flour in those.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's all sugar.
No. Care to guess?
We don't know. The white powder on the outside, you would have thought would be flour.
Yeah. No.
That's usually powdered sugar.
No, that's sugar.
No, that's
molasses.
Nope. It's literally vanilla wafers.
Oh, no kidding.
Vanilla wafers, you put them in a food processor and grind them up, and then you put the rum in.
How cool is that?
And a few other things.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Ooh, that was... There's an afterglow.
It comes back, yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Hey, I told you. I have not let you guys down. Hey, what can I say?
Very nice. All right, to the phones while we can still speak in English. Our first caller is Tim from Canisius, New York. Hiya, Tim. What's up?
Hi, how you doing? I have sitting next to me a Lenovo IdeaPad.
Yeah.
It belongs to a friend of mine. And it's running Windows 10. He has forgotten his password and forgotten where he wrote his password down. And I was wondering how I can recover that or, you know, get him going again.
There's a way.
There are ways to do it.
If it's a Microsoft password, you can go to, excuse me for my rumbles, you can go to the Microsoft website and say forgot password. If it's
he doesn't have one of those, so.
Yeah,
I have one, but he doesn't.
Yeah, Windows 10 really pushes you to create a Microsoft account, and this is one of the reasons, so you don't forget your password. In general, the short answer is there is no way to recover the password.
Okay.
The long answer is there are Linux recovery disks that will, you boot Linux, and it tries to decrypt the password.
Oh, okay.
And Dennis is actually looking for his answer. He's got a different way, too. Because I've used a couple of Linux disks to do that when necessary.
Okay.
It is absolutely doable, but it is not supported. Supported by pretty much anybody. There's various cracking tools that will do it. You need to know where to get them and how to run them.
Yeah, the official Microsoft response is erase the PC and start over and make a Microsoft account.
Right. But you might want to look around at some of the more reputable dealers who can do that, and they will, of course, charge you for it, but that will be a good incentive to remembering your password and writing it down and maybe even making a password for at Microsoft and having that handy for you.
If there's a second admin account, you can log into that one and reset the password of the first account, but not many people make a second account.
No, he didn't do that. He's
there is
very
a way,
naive
it involves
with computers.
Convincing Windows 10 that the command prompt is what you should show instead of one of the utilities from the login screen. And there's a way to do that. I'll get you the link, and we'll put it in the links if that gets approved. And that will definitely make it work. But I'd use this rarely, and I'll make sure to share it with the guys.
Right. Well, the thing is, Microsoft, obviously, like everybody does, Microsoft encrypts the password. Unlike everybody else, Microsoft hasn't changed that encryption ever. So it's well known, and that's why there are many cracking programs that are available. But if you're going to do it legitimately, probably the best thing to do is to bring it to a reputable dealer and have them do it for you.
I like the headline in the PC World article is, all is not lost. You just have to wiggle the lock on your virtual back door.
Yeah. You need bump keys for the back door is what you need. Yeah. Anyway, that's probably your friend's best bet. Sorry.
Okay, that's not a problem. Thank you much.
Thanks. That is one of the good reasons to have a Microsoft password. Even if you make it a second account that you normally don't use, make it an admin account with a Microsoft password, and then you can reset your regular user password. Even if you forget the admin password, you can ask Microsoft, and they will reset it for you and send you the new one.
And that's a good tip anyway. You should never be using an admin account for day-to-day work. Always make a standard account for that. And you'll be able to block like 90% of malware and viruses from getting in because you're not the admin. So if something will pop up and ask for the admin password and you didn't know you were doing anything, that's not good. So don't give it that password.
And
both Windows and Apple, the first account you create is an admin account. So you have to then go in and make a second account as a standard account that you do all your work in. After the fact, which most of us are in now, if you make a new administrator account, you can then log into that account and downgrade your other account to a standard user, which is a little tricky. I'll see if I can find the instructions for that.
Right.
So that way you're working in a standard account all the time without admin privileges, which can help for security.
Yeah, and that's basically one of the big reasons that Microsoft is so prone to so many viruses. Almost everybody runs as the administrator, which gives the virus free reign in your machine. If you were not an administrator, viruses would be much, much less likely to be able to cause damage in your computer. So make sure you're not running as an admin. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 28 minutes after the hour. It is Sound Bites on this joyful holiday edition of the longest running computer show in the known universe right here on Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Boy, you can talk, say brain fart.
Jeez. And you haven't even had any rumble.
I know it.
Jeez. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I think I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm still Dennis Worcester.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, most of us at least are sound bites.
I don't know why. All of a sudden, my brain went, we won't even go there.
Yeah, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Al from Rochester, New York. Hi, Al. What's up?
Hey, guys. Merry Christmas to y'all.
You too.
This is great hearing you enjoying the rum balls. It makes me hope I'm going to find something in my stocking of that nature.
There you go.
Woo-hoo.
Hey, I got a couple things for you. First, I want to say, partly in thanks to your endorsements and kudos. I got a Pixel 3 XL.
Ooh, what do you think?
And I love it. It's fast and it's not cluttered and it's almost everything you said.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's an amazing phone. I'm very pleased with my. I've got the original Pixel XL and I love it.
Yeah, I've had it since day one, and I won't go with any other phone.
Yeah. The hardest thing I have right now is getting a protective case that's not too bulky and yet protects it.
That's the hard part for all of these phones.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I found one. It's coming out of Australia because everyone else is sold out. So we'll be here eventually. But, hey, so I got a related question.
Yeah.
Hey, just to interrupt, Al.
Yeah.
Tech 21.
Okay.
Is the company that makes the cases. I've had this one since I got the phone, and I've dropped it. It's gone down face first, and it works great.
Yeah, TECH21.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not very thick. And the other thing I would highly recommend is the glass cover. There's a, you know, not the plastic, but the glass one. I swear by the glass ones because accidentally one time, while I was not thinking, I put a screwdriver into my pocket where my phone was, and I actually bent over, and all of a sudden I hear, I pulled it out. It was cracked. I could see the screen was cracked. It was the glass protector that broke, not my regular screen.
Nice, nice.
Yeah. I hear you. I found one for a Samsung, actually at Walmart, under the name Black Watch or Black Guard, something like that. What impressed me, besides the price, was that the process in, they had for installing it, because usually installing those screens is a little tricky.
Right. But
this, it just, it holds, they have a holder that puts the screen right over the phone, and you just put it right down, easy peasy. I had it done in 45 seconds.
Nice.
Cool.
So, but anyways, back to my original question. So I have a Yahoo account, unfortunately, but it's there. It's through FrontierNet, and yes, they are perpetual addresses.
Right.
That's great. But I moved. I have the Yahoo app on the phone, and it worked great for a bit. And then I noticed messages were coming through a bit slowly, and like minutes, hours later. And then one day it stopped. And so I deinstalled, reinstalled several dozen times, cleared my cache, et cetera, and every time I tried, it would fail on me. I couldn't even get past the, I could just put in my login ID. I could never even get to the password. So I'll cut to the chase on this, because this was a week of tearing my hair out. I think there's a connection between my problems with the Yahoo account and the fact that it only seems to occur when I'm plugged into my, I'm tapped into my Wi-Fi. If I'm just on cellular data, I don't have the problems, and also, oh, by the way, the messages come through much quicker. Is there anything you can think of causing that?
It's probably the same sending mail server, depending on whether you're Wi-Fi or cellular.
Well, it, unless you're using the Wi-Fi, excuse me, unless you're using your Yahoo app for something other than mail as well, why don't you just use the regular mail account?
The Google app?
The Google app. You can add a, the regular mail program will let you add an account, and you could add
Yahoo.
Yahoo as your.
No, it's Yahoo. You got
Yahoo.
Well, Nick, you came to the one of the conclusions I came to much quicker. I was several days before I thought of that. Interestingly enough, I tried to put it in, add it into the Yahoo app, and same thing.
No, not the Yahoo app. Add it into the Google mail. Sorry.
I misspoke. Yeah, adding the Yahoo account into the Google app.
Mm-hmm.
I would type in almosier@frontiernet.net, and that's as far as I would get. It would just sit there and spin. It would never take me to what's your password even.
Huh.
So if no immediate answers, I'll let you stew about it.
Well, the only thing that I know that other people have tried is clearing the app cache.
Yep, everything. I was about to reset the whole phone.
One of the things we've seen with Frontier accounts, especially because there is that confusion between the Frontier Pop and the Yahoo IMAP. We will often delete the email account from the mail app and then add it back as a manual IMAP with, okay. The Yahoo mail server addresses, IMAP or mail. Was it mail.imap.mail.yahoo.com and smtp.mail.yahoo.com, with your Frontier email address as the username. And we've found quite frequently that works better than relying on the automatic setups that that are used.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah, that might be part of it. Of course, as we reported last week, both AOL and Yahoo are bleeding money, so it's an issue that they may not have a lot of people working on if it's at their end. But at any rate, try what Steve said. Add it in manually to your regular Gmail, to your regular mail program, you know, the Android phones have a mail app.
Yeah.
And you can add accounts pretty easily. One of them is a Yahoo account.
And this may be time to look at like a Gmail account and give everyone your new address so you can stop using the Frontier account. We generally don't recommend people use their ISP's email address because it makes it hard to move ISPs later. And it's almost worse than physically moving, because at least the post office has a change of address form. But trying to remember everyone you gave your email address to, that once a year magazine subscription that still uses the old address. So creating yourself a new email address before you have to stop using the old one, even though now Frontier is allowing you to use the old one forever. We have just run into lots of problems trying to get Frontier Mail because it's going through the Yahoo server.
Yep. And Steve, that is excellent advice. My problem is, and Nick will tell you, I first met Nick when I was trying to get him to sell me an Apple computer so I could teach myself programming.
Yep.
Back in 82, it would be like 1980.
Yeah, somewhere in the early, very late 70s, very early 80s.
Yeah, so I've got, hundreds upon hundreds of people who know my old address, but for most people, that's a great advice.
Well, the other thing you can always do is you can always go into Yahoo and forward that email.
Oh, sure.
Right? Forward it to, say, a Gmail address.
Yeah.
And that will also live forever. And you don't ever have to even think about it again. Or it doesn't have to be Gmail. I mean, whatever makes you happy. But the point is, rather than having to log into Yahoo, you can now use the app that logs into Gmail or whatever else you like and still read your Yahoo Mail without a problem.
Sure. Okay. Sounds good. We're ready for a second different topic?
Yeah.
A little different? Nick, I tried to send you a message on this, and I suspect because it was via Yahoo Mail, it maybe never went through, but there was an article in How to Geek about a week ago, and the author was talking about he discovered that if people are going into Microsoft security and upgrades window and looking for updates to see if there's any new updates,
yeah,
Microsoft classifies those people as seekers.
Right, right, right.
And so Microsoft will send them ahead of everyone else some of the patches and improvements before they've been really tested out and made a part of an official upgrade.
Yeah, that's the caveat right there, before they've been completely tested.
Yeah.
So if you want to be, we all know Adam Osborne famously said the pioneers are the guys with the arrows in their backs. If you want to be one of those beta testers, Microsoft is perfectly happy to let you do that. And all you have to do is continually go looking for upgrades. Eventually, Microsoft will say, here's somebody who's wide open to new experiences. Let's give them a few.
Yeah, those are the types of experiences I can live without.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, thank you. I did see that article, but I did not see an email from you. I'm sorry.
No, that was my end, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, John, I will let you go. Thank you again, and thank you for a wonderful year, and I'm looking forward to the coming year.
Me too. Happy holidays to you, Al. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Al.
Yep.
You Bye-bye. And your family.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. Take care.
Bye. Yeah, Microsoft does have something called MS Seekers, and they are the people who are constantly looking for updates on your machine. And Microsoft knows that, of course,
mm-hmm.
when you go to look for an update. So they add you to their Seekers list and will give you those updates sooner than anybody else, which means, by the way, sooner than they are actually ready for prime time.
You've just become a beta tester.
You've become a beta tester whether you like it or not. And so that's if that's your thing, God love you. But personally, myself, no thank you. Well, I don't run Windows anymore anyway. But if I did, I still would not want to be one of their beta testers.
Yeah,
there's apparently a new feature part of the 19H1 release for next year currently called Restart ASAP. So the biggest thing about Windows updates is it forces you to restart the computer. So one of their solutions is we're going to make it restart more often.
Yes.
That restart only during the inactive hours. So you set your active hours in Windows 10, say 9 to 5, and then it will only restart after active hours. Except it happens to be the one night you're giving a presentation after hours.
Yes, exactly. I don't set. I wouldn't set my active hours before midnight.
Yeah,
frankly, and just leave the thing on all night. But one of the issues that I used to have when I was at RIT was I'd get calls from faculty. I'm in the middle of a presentation and my system rebooted. Yes, you're running Windows 10. Yes, that's how that happens. There at that time there was no way to postpone it. Then they brought out the little thing that said, we're about to do this, you want to postpone it.
Yeah.
And, of course, most of the faculty would just click the wrong button because they weren't paying attention.
Yeah, they didn't take the time to read it.
Or they'd click that forever. Or they would click that forever and,
right.
and just never, ever do the updates.
Right, right.
And eventually Microsoft would install them anyway because you've been waiting too long.
Right. Well, we had a set of software that would tell us what people had on their machines and what levels they were at. So if we saw that somebody had not updated their machine in a while, we would go to them and assist them in making the process happen.
Sneak in their office when they're at lunch and say reboot?
Sometimes, yes. Yes, yes, we would, yes. I can say that now because I'm retired. They can't come in. I think it's statute of limitations has run out on that.
All right, we got a question that came in over the text line. It says, hi, I have a question whether it's a good or bad to update my iMac from High Sierra to Mojave. Machines are about 4 years old. Thank you.
So this is kind of a general upgrade question. And, of course, the answer is it depends. one of the things we've seen on older machines is that they often don't have as much RAM as the newer ones do. Virtually all Macs ship today with 8 gigs of RAM. A few years ago, 4 was common. A few years before that, 2 was common. Apple officially says you only need 2 gigs of RAM for the new OS, which
this is what we in the business call horse manure.
A very, very generous assumption. we are saying that 8 is a lot better. So if you have 4, you're probably okay. 4 gigs of RAM. If you really want to upgrade to Mojave, you probably want to do more memory. We are seeing that because the newest computers come with even more memory and faster processors, the operating system features that take advantage of that stuff can slow down on the older computers. We also generally recommend that you wait for at least the first, if not the second, patch. So don't ever install a 0.0. So right now we're at 14.2. So we've had 2 patches. So most of the problems we've seen have been straightened out. But in general, on the other side, you don't want to get too far behind. So if you're running Sierra now, 10.12, you're 2 versions behind. Currently, Apple is still supporting security updates for 10.12. Eventually, they'll stop, and then you're going to be more vulnerable. So you don't want to get more than 2 or 3 versions behind. You might want to go to 10.13 instead of all the way to 10.14. I know a lot of people that will stay one version behind and let everyone else find the problems in the current version. But the biggest issue is RAM. And then the secondary issue is third-party programs. So if you have programs from Microsoft or Adobe or Intuit, they tend to be the 3 big ones, make sure of compatibility. We have a lot of people that have upgraded their OS and then find out their QuickBooks 2012 doesn't work anymore. Well, yeah, that was 8 years ago. No, seven years ago, yeah. And so you may have to upgrade your Microsoft Office. You may have to upgrade your Adobe Suite. You may have to upgrade your QuickBooks or QuickIn. And for a lot of people, even though the OS upgrade is free, all those ancillary programs you have to upgrade can often add up to a lot of money. So that keep in mind what your third-party programs are and check for any upgrades on those as well. Kind of the same advice in the Windows world, too.
Mm-hmm.
The big 8 to 10 upgrade or 7 to 10 upgrade, check compatibility for your apps and how much RAM you have.
Right. Right.
Yeah, that could definitely upset the whole Apple cart.
You know, we've been saying for decades, price of poker keeps going up.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, that 7 to 10-year-old machine may not necessarily have the oomph, whether it's processing power or RAM or disk space or whatever, to run the newest operating systems.
Because, like you said, the price of poker keeps going up, and everybody wants things to go bigger, better, faster, you know, everything else. But you also have to throw in the cost of, you know, upgrading, whether it's adding more memory or maybe biting the bullet, and that Windows 7 machine just isn't going to cut the mustard anymore. And even though it's working great, yeah, it's not going to do it.
Yep.
Because that software is just demanding more and more every time you upgrade that software.
Well, another thing to consider, at least on the Mac, is Apple's been releasing OS updates or upgrades every year in the fall. And there's a certain first few months of that that the OS just is not necessarily 100% ready. And I'd recommend holding off until at least this time of year, if not sooner. I'd like to see 10.4.3 come out, maybe 10.4.4, and that may not be till the spring. I think 10.13 for a four-year-old machine is probably a nice safe place to be. I think that's going to have a nice balance of system requirements as well as features that you need. The 10.14 upgrade, I haven't seen a lot of earth-shattering features. There's a lot of nice polish.
Dark mode.
Yeah.
This is the big thing.
But for what you're going to, the time and the effort you're going to put into it versus what you're going to get back out of it versus your computer is, I think 10.13 is a place
to plus that software, land. The demands on the system.
Right.
Well, and equally importantly, what people think is, oh, if it's the new version,
it's better.
Then if I don't have the newest version, I'm missing something. Well, the reality is that they've all been really minor incremental increases in stuff.
Do your homework. Figure out what you think you might be missing first.
Right, right.
Then figure out what it's going to take to get that, and plus, is it worth it?
If people take the time, though, usually when a 0.1 or whatever comes up, they'll sit there and tell you what, you know, it's usually adding or, you know, updating or this type of stuff. And folks don't take the time. They just see that it's a newer version. Oh, it's 15.4.2. Right. You know, yeah, I got to have it. Right. They don't actually take the time to sit there and see what it's doing for them. That, right. Hey, yeah, I really don't use that. And maybe I don't need it. Because just updating that one can have a rolling effect to, you know, hit the next software pack, you know, or other software that's on your machine that's running fine. Now all of a sudden you've upset the whole apple cart.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, you don't want to put more effort into it than you really need to. The idea is that the computer should be working for you. You know, you're the human, they're the computer.
Right.
We should some not folks, have to have a lot of babysitting involved.
Part of it, of course, is that you cannot test every configuration.
No.
Because everybody's machine is in some way unique.
Nope. Sure.
But it's been demonstrated time and time again that Microsoft has departments that simply do not seem to talk to each other.
Hmm.
Ever. So I don't know how you do Q&A in those circumstances.
For a home user, for just a residential user, that can be really tough to know what's going on. And making contact with people like us is a great way to get started. You know,
right.
You're going to a really knowledgeable resource for that. The thing that I would say is, again, do your homework, figure out what am I really missing out on if I don't do this, figure out do I really have the computer that I need in order to do this, and figure out how much effort you really have to put in. Most of the time these days you may not be missing that much, or they may be putting out features. At least, for instance, on my iPhone there was a new update that just came out, and one of the things that it did was it allowed phones in China to run with a second SIM card in it.
Oh, right.
I said, well, okay, that's nice.
Doesn't do a lot for you, though.
But it's completely irrelevant to my life and my phone. My phone doesn't have the ability to have two SIMs in it.
Right.
And it had a few other things, too. But again, those were nothing that really applied to me. So I didn't rush out to grab that one. But that's the important thing. Read the release notes.
I got to tell you. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Google Fi.
Yes. We should back up and say what Google Fi is.
Google Fi is Google's phone system,
there.
And it's it runs mostly over Wi-Fi, but it also runs over the Sprint and T-Mobile, which are now apparently merging networks.
Right.
And it's $20 a month plus $10 a gig.
So it's a cheap cell phone plan.
It's a cheap cell phone
that
plan.
That piggybacks off of other carriers.
Piggybacks off other carriers, and if you're on Wi-Fi, of course, it doesn't use any data.
Right. Right? So they're leveraging
calls are free, texts are free.
Calling
it's only
over
if you use data over cellular.
Right.
That you pay $10 a gig.
And you really pay for what you use. It's not like you pay a flat fee up front.
Right, right, right. If you use 12 gig, you pay $12.
Sure.
Right. Sure. No, 1.2 gigs, you pay $12. Whatever. Whatever. It's incremental.
If you spend most of your phone's lifetime near a Wi-Fi network that you have access to, then this is a great way to economize on your mobile spending.
More importantly, I discovered recently that if you are a Google Fi customer, Google will send you a second SIM card for free.
Okay. So now you can put it in.
Or third, or fourth.
A backup phone, or an iPad that has the ability to do this, or a Chromebook?
Maybe? Or in a Chromebook. And I don't know if this one does, but my other Chromebook, this one might not, but my other Chromebook has Wi-Fi, has a SIM card capability. So I could get, if I had, I don't, but if I had Google Fi,
yeah,
I could get a free SIM card to put in that device. And therefore, 99% of the time, I'm on somebody's Wi-Fi somewhere.
Right.
Right? But if I were stranded in my car somewhere and needed to look up something, I don't know what, but it would work over Wi-Fi, and I would get charged the $10 a gig, the percentage of the gig I used.
Sure. Yeah. Well,
and it's free.
Having cellular coverage while you are away from Wi-Fi is fantastic for data. My wife and I have had an iPad since they came out with this, and it is so freeing to be on vacation somewhere where you don't, we went to Washington, D.C. and needed to look up a map of where these things we wanted to see were, or we were doing research. And sometimes it's just not very convenient to do on a phone, or sometimes you're sitting next to your wife and you're thinking, where are we going to go out to for dinner? And we want to look something up. And being able to do that on the iPad and then hand it to somebody and say, here's where I want to go, here's the map, here's the menu, that kind of thing.
Right.
It's so much more convenient.
It's very convenient. So, and there are times I have found myself in the middle of nowhere and I got to have an update to my website.
Right.
And it's so much easier to do it on a computer.
If you can get that for free and a buck a gig, that's definitely a great deal. That's
exactly right. All right, we're going to take a slightly longer break. It's the end of our first hour. You've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but you're a slow learner and you'll get to do it again because we're only going to take a break, and then we'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. This is Soundbites. I'm the truly great and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported holiday edition of Soundbites. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, hurtling headlong into the second hour. That's Dennis Worster right there, ladies and gentlemen.
It's true.
Hiding behind the, he's got the thing over his eyes like he's...
No. Yeah.
I've got a wide-angle camera, but not that wide.
Not that wide. Well, I'm that wide.
We're doing our best.
No, stand on you two guys. It's fine with me. Or I could snuggle up to Steve.
Yeah, or well, no, here, wait a minute.
Yeah, Dave doesn't need his camera.
We've all got our deodorant.
No, we're good. We're good. We did it. It's too late. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
We're all in. Okay, we're all in. I have to rearrange everything else. We're not only all in, we are going back to the Sane Smart. That's it. Sane Smart is the company. All right, here we go. Our next caller is Sherry, waiting patiently in Rochester, New York. Hi, Sherry. What's up?
Hi. My question is, I just bought a new Pixel phone, Google Pixel.
Yeah.
And I had a Galaxy S6 Edge phone. And unfortunately, I was using the Samsung calendar. Yeah, so, and it wasn't synced, but then later on I synced it with Google. But I can't see the calendar. You know, if I go on my computer and look at it, I don't see it there, and I can't see it on the Pixel phone either. So
yeah.
Is there an app that I can transfer the calendar information somewhere else so I can get it on my phone?
That's a lovely question. There's a way to do that with a cord that they did for me at the at the thing. Man, it is doable. There is a way to import your old events from another calendar application. What you need to do is you got to boot up your old phone, and somewhere in the setup there should be an export your data to either
what carrier is she with?
Yeah, AT&T.
Yeah. All right, they did have. I know Verizon had an app, and so did AT&T for the various phones. That you can take and go from one phone over to another phone. It'll transfer all the data. You might have to check with your AT&T carrier.
Yeah, they usually do that in the carrier store for you.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't.
Well, with the Google, I got the Google Pixel 3 XL, and they do have like a transfer thing that you can do through the power cord.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I did that, but of course the calendar didn't come over.
Right.
It was very simple. Everything transferred over great except that calendar. So I even went in and tried to find an app. I looked up iCal. That didn't work good.
Right.
Hmm.
So I'm wondering if there's some other app or, you know, that I can export the thing out.
Well, one thing you can try is boot up the old phone, which should still have all your data on it, even though you can't connect to the internet or to connect to a network.
Right.
And you should still be able to connect to your local Wi-Fi.
Right.
So what you want to do is go into your calendar app, the Samsung calendar app, and look for an option to export.
I think I did that, but...
When you do that, look for the... If you have the option to choose different formats, use CSV, which is short for comma separated variables.
Right. I'm familiar.
That should then save it to a file, which you can then, using your other stuff, move over to your computer and then over to, well, once it's on your computer, you can actually log in right there to Google Calendar and select import CSV and, defaults to your primary calendar, but if you've got multiple calendars, you can set up a separate calendar for it, and you're on your way.
Right, I'm familiar with that process, but you think there's something in the settings in the Samsung calendar for me to do that?
In the calendar itself, yes. Not in settings, not in the little gear icon.
Okay.
But in the calendar app itself. There should be an option to export your data.
Hmm. All right. I thought I checked for that and did not see that, but I will check again.
Yeah. You know, open up your calendar app and hit the little three dots.
Yeah, that's the only.
I'm afraid I don't have my Samsung phone anymore, and I certainly don't have it with me, or I'd look it up for you right now. But
okay.
Unfortunately, I don't any longer.
Okay.
If anybody out there with a Samsung phone can verify whether there's an export feature in the Verizon or Samsung calendar, that would be great.
Yeah, put the word out. Don't use Samsung calendar.
No, in general, use the calendar from the company that made your phone. So Google or Apple. Use their calendars, because one of the nice things about both of those is they will save it to the web, and you're literally just connecting to the web, and all the data are saved there. So when you change phones, or you want to look at it on your desktop or laptop or tablet or watch, it's all there.
Right.
And you said you tried using the iCal import export app?
Yeah, that was kind of messy. It just didn't work. I'm not sure what the problem was.
A lot of websites are suggesting that one. There's another one from iSkySoft Toolbox.
Yeah, I saw that too. I didn't try that one yet, but yeah,
let them say free download, but then to use it, you got to pay money.
Right.
Yeah.
Every download is free.
Right, sure. Yeah. But if you want to export more than 10 records, it's going to cost you money. Right
or they'll do it and then say, now, here's what we can do for you if you pay this amount of money.
Yeah, right.
They gather all the information. There it is. All right, let's do it. No, you got to pay.
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Shoot. Oh, yeah. That's probably what happened, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, yeah, definitely. Yep. Almost guarantee it.
Yeah. All right, guys.
Al Mosier says in the chat, Al Mosier says AT&T definitely has a transfer app. Very easy by end user.
Yeah.
So would that be in the Google Play Store? Or the AT&T store?
I would call the AT&T store and say, how do I get this and how do I use it?
Somebody over there do it for you.
Right. Go to the store and sit there and say, I need these data transferred to the other phone. Help me out.
Well, I bought this phone. They're probably mad at me because I didn't buy the phone through them.
So. I didn't buy my phone through them either, and the guy was amazing.
Yeah, you're paying them every month for service.
Yeah, you're still paying them every month as a customer.
That's right. Don't take any back talk. Sherry, go for it.
That's right.
Okay.
Give him hell.
Yeah. We have faith in you, Sherry.
You can do it.
Give him hell, Sherry.
All right, guys.
All right.
Happy holidays.
You too.
Merry Christmas.
All right.
We've unleashed a beast now.
Yeah, cool.
Look out, mister.
Now all of a sudden we'll hear some rage story coming from an AT&T store.
Yep. I've got his name written somewhere.
Woman goes in and goes.
I got his name written somewhere, and I wrote a nice note. But the guy, I can't remember his name, might have been Dave. But the guy at Verizon who helped me out was just amazing. He sat down, he did everything, made sure it was all moved over, told me everything he was doing. We had a nice chit-chat in between. It was excellent. It was excellent. Kudos to that guy. I want to say his name was David, but I've got it written down somewhere, but not accessible here. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hi, Nick. Real quick, first of all, Merry Christmas to all of you.
And you too.
And thank you very much for all of the hard work and effort you put into doing this every week.
Well, we're delighted to do it, or we're too dumb to say no. One of the two.
Well, you don't hear the thank yous often enough, I think.
Thank you. That's true.
Nice to hear.
Always nice to hear.
For the nice lady who called in with the problem with the calendar.
Yeah.
When my phone got the Google Calendar, which wasn't on it when I first started. Now, your mileage may vary, but I have a Stylo V2 on Verizon. When the Google Calendar first came up, it said, do you want to use the Google Calendar? And when I said yes, it automatically went in and grabbed all of my settings out of my regular original calendar.
Right, and that will certainly do that, except for the fact that she's on a different phone and those data are not on that phone.
Maybe she can install the Google Calendar on the old phone and have it say, okay, I'm going to upload it to Google.
That's another idea. That's another excellent idea.
If she goes in on Wi-Fi, she can still put the Google Calendar. Maybe she just didn't activate it on that phone. But if she can put it on the phone, it will come in and say, do you want your settings? And the minute you say yes, she doesn't have to export or anything because now it'll go into the Google Calendar and it'll be synced with all our Google devices.
Well, excellent. Sherry, I know you're still listening because why wouldn't you be? Andy has your solution right there. Thanks. Okay, excellent.
It seemed a lot less painful than exporting it and all the other stuff.
Right, yeah. Right.
All right. So you guys have a Merry Christmas, and we'll be listening.
You too. Thanks a lot, Andy. Bye-bye. Yeah, Al Mosier in the chat has another excellent idea. Al Mosier has another excellent idea. How many times do I have to say that? It's always true. he strongly recommends that anybody with cell phones or issues go to their vendor before the after Christmas rush. Because after Christmas, there's going to be
everyone going to activate the new phones I just got.
Right. So, yeah, that makes an extreme amount of sense.
The problem is trying to figure out how to use the new phone they just got.
right.
More likely, yeah.
And so it's better off to go now. We're back to the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Batavia, New York. Hi, Pat. What's up?
Well, I've got a question for you guys. I've downloaded some files in a compressed in a zip format.
Yeah.
Put them on a thumb drive.
Yeah.
If would I be able to, if I were to get an iPad, is there a way that those will play on the iPad, or do you, I mean, they're compressed right now, and they're ultimately going to be MP3 files.
Not directly.
You can't open zip files on an iPad?
You can, but there's the way the file storage works, there isn't really any place to put them. You don't have access to file storage as easily as on a computer.
What if he used an external hard drive, like the flash drive?
It's an iPad.
It's an iPad, yeah.
It doesn't have a USB port?
No.
They have USB-C, but...
It has to be a special drive. I know Seagate makes one that has an app on the iPad to access the drive separately. What would be easier is on a computer, wherever you got the MP3s from, put them onto one of the cloud storage drives, like either Apple's iCloud or Dropbox or Google Drive, and then that app on the iPad can access them and play them.
Okay, since I already have them, I guess the first thing would be to extract the files.
Right.
And then I could put them onto the drive.
Right.
Google Drive?
Yeah, Google Drive, would any drive that you and the other person both have access to. So it could be Google Drive, iCloud, or OneDrive. Doesn't matter.
On either
well,
of
just
your...
for simplicity, I just made it me.
Sure.
I can figure out. So just imagine it's me we're talking about.
Yeah.
So if I put it on the Google Drive, then with my iPad, I can access it that way.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. You can. There is a Google Drive app. Yeah. That you can install from the Apple App Store on your iPad.
Okay. Very good.
Yep. There you go.
I definitely have to extract it first, right?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Yes.
There are unzippers for the iPad, but I'm not sure how they handle the file storage. Although the new Files app, so it used to be every app had its own private file storage, and it didn't really play with other apps, part of the sandboxing to keep data safe. But in the latest iOS, they have added a files app to let you see your files in your cloud storage service. So you could see your Google Drive, your iDrive. Because one thing I haven't tried, normally for music files, MP3 files, it wants you to sync them with iTunes. I haven't tried, you can play them one at a time, but if you want to play them in the music library, I haven't tried trying to import them into the music app. Because I do that with video files. I put video files on my Google Drive that I want to watch, and then they just show up on my iPad through Google Drive. But I haven't tried it with music.
Yeah. Right.
Let me actually find a music file and try it while we're talking
sure,
about
why
other things. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I could use a soundbites file. I have a lot of those.
You do have a couple, one or two, somewhere along the line. I know. We've been having. It's interesting to me that everybody's got a cloud service. Everybody does it just a little bit differently, but they all talk to each other. So I can get I can reach iCloud on my Chromebook. You can reach Google Drive on your iPad. It makes sense to me because everything should be agnostic.
Well, yeah, I
right?
mean, you want
universal.
Remember ASCII, you know?
Exactly.
The idea is you represent your text in an encoded form. So you use something like, you know, Abyssidic or you know, what's the newest one with all the potential? I'll think of it later.
Unicode.
Unicode, thank you.
Yeah, Unicode.
And that has, you know, a spot for all the Roman characters as well as all the Asian characters from all the different languages and emoji and everything else. And what I really like is to have my file formats be very standardized, not proprietary. I like for my data transfer protocols to be very standardized and open and not proprietary as well. And, you know, this might sound ridiculous coming from an Apple fan, but I really like being able to know, for instance, the RSS protocol for podcasts is really just an RSS feed with file attachments in it. And it doesn't. There's nobody who's trying to own that or have specific capabilities over that. There are ad companies that are trying to inject ads into your podcasts, but the concept of having the mechanism by which data gets to you be a well understood and open format, I think is always going to be best.
Yep, I agree. That's why somebody was surprised the other day that I save, although I'm on Linux, I save all of my compressed files as zips.
Okay.
Instead of tars or any of that stuff.
Right.
And I said, it's for compatibility. I can send anybody a file without thinking about it.
That's right.
Everybody can open a zip.
That's true. Yeah, it's been ported to everything.
Right. And so, you know, where you may not, you may find you'd have to install, sure, you can install something that opens a tar file.
Sure.
You can install something that opens a gzip file.
Mm-hmm.
I get that.
I'm a Mac guy. We go all the way back to binhex and
all that stuff too.
So it's been, and stuff at archives and.
Right.
We've seen it.
But everybody knows zip. Everybody can, every operating system can handle zip.
Sure.
So why not?
Right. It's the safe choice.
Is it the most compressible? No. I have 3 terabytes of disk space.
Sure.
The extra 100 megabytes isn't even going to be noticeable.
That's right. Disk space is cheap.
Disk space is cheap. So why not?
Yes. Sanity is worth it.
Exactly.
You know, I had an experience switching gears for a minute with a new product I'd never used before. I had a client that called me and they said, I've got a big house. I'm over in Brighton and I want to put in some Wi-Fi. And I said, you know what? This is a great example of where the Wi-Fi capabilities have really grown in the past decade or so, where it used to be you'd get a little router that had some antennas on it, and you'd put that in hopefully the middle of your house if you were able to, and try and get as much coverage as you could. And you just kind of lived with some rooms were going to be worse than others, and that's just kind of the way it was. Or if your microwave is running, then you know your Wi-Fi might get killed. So there are these new products now that allow you to make a mesh network at your house.
Oh, they're the best.
And they're, I will admit, they're not the cheapest.
No.
But I used one from a company called Eero. That's Eero.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of them.
Yeah, we saw those.
Yeah. Good stuff, man. Number one, super easy to set up. There's an app that you get for your phone. You put it in, and it literally walks you through step by step how to do this. You do not need to have any technical expertise to do this. You set that up. You plug in your internet. The device phones home back to Eero Central, says, yep, I'm plugged in. And that tells your phone, yep, it's plugged in. And then it sends you along in the app to the next step. And over the course of a half an hour or so, we had placed the main unit and a couple of other repeater units called beacons, other places in the house. And they all talk to each other. And I did a speed test in the farthest bedroom that they had, and it was still perfectly acceptable.
Yep.
And I was amazed how quickly we were able to set that up and how successful we were in a short period of time without a lot of site surveys and checking to see, you know, do they have forced air jacks or forced air conduit for heating and cooling and all the shadows that those make for Wi-Fi.
Right.
So I would say, you know, if you're looking for a nice upgrade for your family or for your in-laws or for parents that you might have, man, this is definitely the way to go. Totally worth the investment.
And especially Eero has a lot of nice remote management features, so you can check on your parents' Wi-Fi and when you're at home, if they live in a different, different house, different city, different state,
right.
And still be able to check on it. And one thing that is making Wi-Fi so difficult these days is the number of devices you're using. Mm-hmm. You might think you've got a computer and a phone, but you might have 30 or 40 devices on your network or more because your spouse has a computer and a phone and a tablet. Your kids probably have the same. You've got doorbells and thermostats and security cameras your blinds now.
Right.
So all that stuff is on your network now.
Your Nintendo Wii, your smart TV, your kids' Game Boys, all of those things.
Your Roku boxes.
Yes, sure. Any of the set-top boxes that you might have.
Yep.
Those are all expecting your Blu-ray player. They might all be expecting to get online.
Yeah.
So suddenly, whereas you thought you had 4 or 5, no, you've really got 20, maybe 25, maybe 30 devices that 10 years ago you might not have even considered.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich. From Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Rich. What's up?
Hey, guys. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and all that good stuff.
You too.
I know that it's easy to do Dropbox and things like that. My question is it easy for me to make my own kind of Wi-Fi area to keep files, kind of like making a Google Drive or a Dropbox myself on my own network.
On your own network is actually fairly easy in any one of a dozen ways. Over the internet is a little harder, but not difficult.
Yeah, I would say a lot of routers have USB ports in the back where you can plug in a drive, and then that will make the drive accessible to devices on the network.
Or get a network drive.
Or get something called a network-attached storage device.
Yeah, like a Buffalo drive or something like that.
Or even you can share a folder from the hard drive on your computer to the rest of the network.
Okay. Now, what about access outside of my network?
That's harder.
And well, actually, it's really easy. The hard part is making it secure so no one else gets in.
Right. But that's a little harder. If you're going to do that, then you might want to have a network drive area that you can share.
Yeah, because one of the problems is since you're sharing your hard drive on the internet, anyone can access it.
So is that like getting a firewall, if you will?
Right. You need to open your firewall to allow the drive to be shared on the internet, but you want to make sure the drive has enough security so that it's only shared to people with the right username and password.
Okay.
Right. There is a product called OwnCloud, OwnCloud, OwnCloud.org, which is the leading open source cloud collaboration platform. And you can certainly do that. You can also share any files you want through most of the already existing online storage services.
Right. And I have seen that also. I was just kind of curious if it was, you know, something to do or play around with or whatever to do something like that. I mean, I'm not looking at sharing secured files, social security numbers and bank accounts. I'm looking at, letters and things like that, documents.
Yep.
That are not, right. Any kind of sensitivity to it other than to people that are around.
Right. If you want to share something like that online to people who are not in your house, you can do that very easily through most of the cloud storage services. For example, in Google Docs, you can every document has a share button, and you can put in the email addresses. They don't necessarily have to have a Gmail account.
Okay.
But you can then say, I want to share it with these people. And you can then share it as something they can view or they can edit.
Oh, okay.
So
maybe that's a better idea then.
Well, it's certainly already there. It's already free. If you're storing them as Google document formatted documents, right? If you don't store them as PDFs or DocX, you store them as actual Google Drive things, then that storage is free, and you can store as many of those as you like.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Thank you for the help. And again, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dennis Worcester, Meenik, Francesco, and you. 30 minutes after the hour. Soundbites member supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Derek Lucas. Join me weekdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. for the Coffee Break Concert on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36... Oh, sorry, forgot.
Come on, man.
Sorry, man.
Dennis Worcester's over here.
Where is he?
Huh? Still here.
Who is he?
Just me, Dennis Worster.
Dennis Worster, and I'm Nick Francesco. I had a second rumble. This is my excuse.
Yeah, let's say that.
Yeah. It's not a good reason, but it is an excuse.
True.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
You too.
You guys need to cut down on those rumbles. You've got to drive soon.
That's exactly right.
We're limiting ourselves to 1 hour.
1 hour is how that works.
Going back to the calendars, I'm embarrassed to say that my wife actually still has a Windows phone. And
holy moly!
And a lot of times
she's the one.
We share a calendar, so you know if I'm doing something and you know she needs to know what's going on because she needs to make an appointment. We share a calendar.
Sure.
So what I did is I found something that would sync with not only her phone but some like my tablet and the computer, and you update on one, it goes to all of them, and it syncs even with Google Calendar and Windows Live and Outlook and Facebook, you name it.
Nice.
Okay, it's called One Calendar, and it works fantastic.
Thank you. That's a great.
You can pay for it also and get more features.
Was that number one or word one?
The word one.
Okay.
All one word.
Yeah. Excellent. Looks like a nice product.
Yeah, and it syncs beautifully. As soon as you put a date in there for something, it automatically syncs.
Nice. Very, very nice.
And like I said, it crosses platforms. So at least if I'm using Google Calendar and she's got to use this, it will sync with it.
Nice.
You know? So it's another alternative. And if you have it on your PC, you've always got a backup of your calendar.
Right.
And
excellent.
If you install this, boom. Whatever device you got it on, there's all your information from your calendar.
Very cool. Thanks, Mark.
So,
very nice.
Just wanted to throw that out to you.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Very, very nice. The as we were saying earlier, everybody's got a way to let everybody do everything nowadays, and that's only all to the good.
Yeah.
At some point, it shouldn't matter what you're using. You should be able to share with everybody.
And most of the services allow you to share with them other people using the same service.
Right.
So it's nice to have a cross-platform
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Our next caller is Scotty from Greece, New York. Hi, Scotty. What's up?
I'm curious about the VoIP. The ads, I keep seeing VoIP ads, getting that kind of service rather than having a landline on with Spectrum.
Sure.
You are using VoIP.
Yeah, actually.
No.
Yes, you are.
I'm just curious.
Yeah,
about it.
Spectrum landlines are VoIP.
Yeah, they are.
So voice is basic is generically voice over IP, internet protocol. So it's VoIP is a telephone on the internet.
And that's what... that's what you're actually getting with Time Warner, with Spectrum, excuse me.
Yeah, but there are third-party services that will use your internet service, UMA and Vonage and Ring. There's a bunch of different ones that offer VoIP services. And it basically comes down to comparison shopping with, you know, on any type of product. Who will give you the best deals, the best service, the best packages?
But they all work exactly the same as your Spectrum phone does. You get a phone number, whether you move your phone number or get a new one. You put in the device, you connect it to your network, and you make phone calls and receive phone calls. And that's exactly all it does. It's all magic underneath, but there's no extra magic. That's just how it works. And VoIP works really well. You can even use VoIP on many phones. For example, on my Pixel 3, I can use Google Voice to make phone calls, and that all happens over the internet, which is the definition of VoIP, voice over internet protocol. VoIP is not a new thing. It's what you're using now if you have a Spectrum phone or a Time Warner phone. It's what you can use if you're using Google Voice. So it's a very common thing. It's a very usable thing. It's not a new technology. It's a very well understood technology.
One of the big sort of selling points on the different services is whether you can use the handsets you already have. or you need to buy their handsets. And that's the term they use now for the thing you hold in your hand,
right?
That we would
call
a telephone. So you have your telephone handset, and then you have your phone service that goes along with it.
Well, I'm just curious about if it would be worthwhile, if there would be a cost savings to switching over.
Often there is. It depends on the plan you get, and only you know your calling pattern. But in general, you will find that you can save money by going with a third-party VoIP system, and it depends on whether or not you need a phone, a handset, as Steve calls it. For example, I can make, using Google Voice, which is, by the way, free, I can make calls over my computer. So if I want to make a call, I put on my headset and make a call right from the computer or laptop or whatever. I can do it from my phone or my tablet or whatever I want. But if you want something along the lines of Vonage or RingCentral or any one of those, then you would also need to get a handset or a headset, I suppose.
Yeah.
But you need a handset in order to do the dialing and things like that. So.
And often there's a router that you plug in to your internet service that basically converts internet to telephone, and then the handsets either wired or wirelessly plug into the VoIP router,
right,
so you can make the phone calls.
So I would be adding more RF into the building, right?
Well, it can be. It doesn't have to be RF. It can be, if you get something with a handset, it can all be wired.
Okay.
So you aren't necessarily using more RF in any way. You just need to do your research to the various VoIP services. Steve's got a list of the 10 best. Those are business services, but still. Do your research and see which one makes sense for you monetarily, and also that has a decent handset that you then aren't adding to the RF in the building.
Well, I wouldn't be the first person who's actually set off on this venture, who's actually already created the wheel, so I don't have to do that.
Well, most of these services have a series of help things that you can do. They're generally just packages. Almost always, you get the package, you plug it into your router, you go on the website and say, this is the number off the back of the phone, of the handset, and this is my account, and they set you up and you're done. It's a 5-minute process.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is you're talking about there's various providers.
Right.
So who's already done the research for shopping?
Oh, Steve just put up a list on our website.
Good news, we've got that.
Well, that's on
soundbites.org
website.
Soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. And there's a list there right now, a post entitled Top 10 Best Business VoIP Phone Services of 2018. Right now, it's the second one down from the top. As we add more throughout the day, it'll go down farther, but you'll be able to see it by scrolling down or maybe having to hit next page. But generally speaking, it'll be somewhere on that page.
Excellent, gentlemen, and I'd like to wish you and your staff and also the audience out there in Greece and the United States and the globe a happy holiday and Merry Christmas.
You too. Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, a lot of people are going to VoIP phones now.
Right, yeah. Do they still work if you need to have an analog line for like a VoIP fax machine, or if, you know, God forbid, you're doing a dial-up service or a credit card terminal or things like that?
I don't know if they work with those. I know that most credit card things nowadays are you know,
Internet-based.
PayPal or the other one.
Yeah. But yeah, when we still had our dial-up merchant box, it did work over our Spectrum VoIP telephone service. And faxing worked too. We used to use Magic Jack, which was an early VoIP provider. Had trouble with faxing on Magic Jack because the quality wasn't high enough.
Do they have E911 on those now?
Yeah, so the two major problems with VoIP is the 911 service. So if you call 911, it doesn't know where you are because your landline knows where you are by the phone company. So there is an electronic 911 service, E911, that you sign up for, and you basically, from your VoIP provider, you say this phone number is at this address. So if you do need to call 911, they know your address. The other problem is that if you lose power, your VoIP phone system goes down. With a plain old telephone system, the POTS, the phone system is powered by the phone system. So if your power goes out, your telephone still works. So a lot of people will put their VoIP router on a UPS along with your internet router and your TV cable box, and
because you want the essentials
when the power goes out, yeah. so that you can still get, and just like cell phones, if the power goes out in your house, your cell phone works as long as the cell tower still has power. So it depends on the how widespread the outage is. Your cell phone works until it runs out of power, and so
which you can recharge from UPS
from the UPS, yeah. Until the UPS runs out of power, so
right.
So some people, and then if you live in a power plagued area, you may want to actually get a backup generator, especially for businesses. Get a backup generator,
hand crank generator.
We had a customer a couple years ago when we had the big blackout here. Mm-hmm. They had generators that could power their business, but not the air conditioner. So they could open the windows to let a breeze through, but then the generators were too loud to work. So you could either have power in your office or a breeze, but not both.
Right, right, right.
That's a hard choice.
All right, back to the phones. Our next call, that's an easy choice. Our next caller is Chuck from Penfield, New York. Hi, Chuck. What's up?
Hi, gentlemen. You may have covered this, but I thought I'd run it by you anyhow. I've got an email issue. I have an AOL account that's probably 10, 15 years old that I just use occasionally for random stuff. A couple months ago, I started getting maybe 4 or 5 emails a day from teaparty.org. And after a couple calls and stuff back on with AOL, we got that eliminated. Then I started getting random stuff from everybody in the world, it seems.
Yeah.
Up to 30 or 40 a day.
Yeah, you got put on a list.
Well, yeah, and my only, after conversations with AOL and the usual runaround, my thinking is about the only thing I can do is abandon the account and just go elsewhere. Is that about it?
Yeah, pretty much. Well,
you could stick with AOL and just make a new email address, but
right.
Yeah, once your email right. address gets put on the spam list, there's very little you can do about it.
Okay. One of the things that I recommend for people is Gmail, and here's why. Google seems to be exceptionally good at keeping up their spam filters. I get much, much, much less spam on my Gmail accounts than I do on my other accounts.
Well, you see much less spam.
Well, you're right. I see much less spam because it kills it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I've done a couple of things. I've sent, for about a week, I sent everything I got to their AOL fish dot whatever the website or whatever the email
yeah.
was, and that did no good.
Nope.
If I read through their description of spam mail and et cetera, it says something like, most of the junk email and spam will be caught at our servers, but every once in a while, a few get through. Well, that ain't what's happening. Nothing's being caught. And it's all getting through.
Well, they're stopping 1 billion messages a day. The fact that you only get 10 or 20 is pretty good.
Oh, gee. Well, now why? I do have another AOL account, and I get nothing through that. And just like I said, for 15 years, I got maybe one or two a week from this account.
That email address got put on a spam list, and those spam lists get shared by all the spammers.
Right.
Okay. And one of the things I was thinking of doing, and I don't know how valid this would be, is I've just let the stuff pile up. There's probably 2,000 or 3,000 emails there now. will it get to the point where the account will be full and stuff will start bouncing and then they'll all go away, or is it my wishful thinking?
It's wishful thinking.
Okay.
Well, half and half. The account will get full.
Right.
You're limited to a certain number of emails in your mailbox. I forget what that is, and I will. And so the account will get full. It won't receive any more mail. It will bounce to the other end. Whether the other end takes you off the list or not is the wishful thinking.
And is there, like with the rest of the accounts, it stays there for so many days and then gets dumped?
If you put it in the trash. Right. If you put it in the trash, it's auto-deleted. But if you leave it in the inbox, it won't be.
Well, yeah, I'm putting it in another folder.
Yeah, so it's still part of your AOL storage
trash,
limit.
No.
Yeah.
What I could do is let it fill up and stuff. Things start to bounce. Wait a few weeks and then take maybe 15 or 20 of those off and see if I start getting stuff again. Or is that not a smart? Maybe smartest thing to do is, like I said, just
see,
move on.
The thing of it is even though you take those out and block those, this is a game of leapfrog.
Yeah.
You go ahead and do those and eliminate, get those blocked. They just turn around and go get another batch of email, you know, from another site to bombard you. Because they're passing that list on to other people.
Yeah, okay.
And it looks like the AOL mailbox limit is 25 megabytes. Which that could be 50,000 messages, 100,000 messages.
I don't want to wait forever.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, just
the
Well,
if you get a Gmail account, you can feed your AOL mail into Gmail, use the Gmail filters, the spam filter Gmail has, and then still use your AOL address.
I don't know how much that'll work because it's now coming from a different address.
Well, have AOL forward to Gmail,
and then just read it there.
That might, probably may not be as good as Gmail filtering.
Would Gmail be any better than, would any of these guys be any better than the other guy?
Well, like I said,
get you quote on their list?
Well, like I said, I see very, very little spam on Gmail. Because
I saw very, very little on this until.
Well, but I'm still seeing very little because they do an amazing job of keeping their spam lists up to date.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see a great deal of spam. Now, I have some accounts that are not on Gmail. They fill up with spam like you wouldn't believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that the Gmail spam filters are working.
Okay.
And they're free.
Okay, well, these guys are supposed to have spam filters too, but like I said, that ain't happening.
Well, clearly not entirely as accurate or as kept up to date.
Here's what I would say. It costs you nothing to try it.
Yeah. Right.
Jump into Gmail.
Yeah, and I've been all over the internet. There are, here's what you got to do to move that stuff you want from one account to the next account. I can do that.
Right. Gmail will go and fetch the mail from your existing account.
Yep.
They'll do that for free, and they'll sort it and de-spamify it and filter it as it comes in to Gmail.
Okay.
Right.
So when you look at your inbox, you're going to see things that are not spam. They're going to have a separate section just for spam. So if you want to go check it out and see what they're kicking through.
Yeah.
And see what they're filtering out, definitely go do that. Again, it doesn't cost you anything but a little bit of time.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised. I've been a Gmail user for almost 20 years, and I've turned on dozens of other people who just said, I can't stand all this extra bogus mail I'm getting.
Yeah.
So we route it through the Gmail system. Then we tell their computer to go pick up the messages from Gmail. So they never really have to go to the Gmail website if they don't want to.
You know, as I go through some of this, just kind of thumb through some of this stuff, it's astonishing to me that they would even bother sending this stuff out. You look at this and say, who cares?
Well, they send a billion messages, and if 0.1% of the people respond, they make a fortune.
Yeah,
and they do.
All right, we're in the wrong business, I guess.
Yeah.
All right,
exactly.
Thank you, gentlemen.
We're too honest.
Yep.
Right.
All right.
And let's not forget, it's a homegrown product. The guy who created Gmail was from Rochester.
Didn't know that.
And now you do. All right, that music tells me you've wasted 2 solid hours of your life with this nonsense. We're done for another week. Not done for the year. We'll be back here next Saturday. But we are done for another week. And I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. You got to call earlier and more often, please. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. Definitely want to thank Dennis Worcester, who came in to give us a hand today. We love Dennis. Up to a point. Don't get excited. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.